Hey everybody, I'm Drew and I'm an addict.
Hey Drew.
No, I'm all right, Mike. Thank you though. So if we could just take a second, kind of reopen this thing up, so I can get myself out of the way. Hopefully, deliver a message and not a mess. All right. So once again, I'm Drew and I'm an addict. So this is important to me. This was one of my first events that I ever attended, as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I came up here with my sponsor and he actually spoke right here, on the third step. So it's important for me to be here, man. It's important for me. Robbie is telling me to tell the truth, so it's important for me to come up and tell the truth and allow myself to be removed to the point where I'm not just kind of spewing a bunch of bullshit and trying to sound good and look cool. So I first heard what the name for the retreat was itself, right? Fighting Fire with Fire. And I read some books and stuff, and I ain't never heard that in any of the literature. So I was just kind of thinking, and honestly, I first thought about it. I was like, fighting fire with fire. I'm like, fighting drugs with drugs. That sounds like a maintenance program. You know what I mean? And that's where I went. And but then, like, so I started to think about it and talk to a couple people, man, and reality is fighting fire with fire, fighting the disease with an addict, fighting addiction with an addict. The ultimate weapon, right? So that's kind of where I went with it, and it's funny because I'm sitting over there and I'm kind of nervous because, like, this is important to me to open up a spiritual retreat in a spiritual way, hopefully set the pace for how the retreat is or whatever it may be, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching all these people come walking up and I'm watching all these people come walking up and they're people that I love. You know what I mean? They're people that have either helped me along the way or asked for my help along the way. They're people that have shown me unconditional love when I wasn't really able to love myself. They're people that that have just become true friends and family to me. You know, the guys that I sponsor and the guys that they sponsor and my sponsor himself, it's just, it's become, I don't know, it's really, for me, it's true love. I was just going over a four-step with one of the guys that I sponsored the other day, and we were talking about that, and we were talking about how, what true love is, and a lot of times we go, when we're talking about true love, we go directly to that kind of romantic relationship between a significant other that involves, like, sex and stuff like that. And I looked at him and I said, man, you know, like, what we have is true love. And I said, you know, that might sound weird and it might feel weird. And he looked at me and he said, no, it sounds weird, but it doesn't feel weird at all. And that meant a lot to me, man. You know what I mean? Because it doesn't feel weird at all to me either. A guy said this to me a few years ago, and he said, this thing's all about love. And literally, this guy said a few things to me that has completely changed the way that I view things. And when he's made that statement to me that this is all about love, like, that made a lot of sense. And I don't know why it made sense. Like, sometimes shit makes sense to me and I have no clue why. But I've done some work with that ever since, and, like, kind of through the step process, I've come to an understanding of why that made so much sense to me. He's also said to me that no matter what I'm going through, no matter what is happening in my life, no matter what troubles I might be experiencing, the answer is always more NA. And that made a lot of sense to me too. Because I've heard some misinformation where people tell me, well, sometimes you gotta back away from the program, sometimes you gotta back away from the fellowship. And I say bullshit. If I'm feeling something, right? Because it tells me right here, Narcotics Anonymous is a healthy environment for growth. As a fellowship, we love and cherish one another, supporting our new way of life together. That's directly out of the basic text, more will be revealed. So, like, if I truly believe in that, but then, like, as soon as something happens to me, oh, I gotta fall back from this. I better not show up there. Let me take a couple months off. Drop my service commitments. That doesn't check out to me, man. I've found that one of the most loving things I can do for myself and somebody else is be honest. Right? Principles over personalities. A good friend of mine. Right? Because I'm continuing to listen. I'm continuing to try to put myself in position to grow. And I was one of those dudes, anytime somebody talked about principles over personalities, I was always like, oh yeah. Like, I don't like that motherfucker, so I gotta apply principles over personalities with him. It's my personality, right? But then he pointed out, like, principles over personalities is hardest to do when I love somebody. When I want you to be my friend, when I want you to cherish what I say or what I do, and, like, I still have to tell you the truth despite, like, what you might feel. One of my friends told me today I can be a little ruthless when I'm telling the truth. My sponsor used to call me Frank all the time, because that seemed to be one of my defects that was glaring. You know, but that comes, man, that comes from a point of, like, an active addiction. I was never that guy who could say something. I couldn't tell you the truth for fear that you wouldn't want to be my friend anymore. God forbid I said something to you that you didn't like or didn't fall in line with what your thought process was, and then you wouldn't call me when nobody else was calling me. I was that dude who sat on the couch for a few days in a row just waiting for somebody to call. You know what I mean? And maybe that's why that thing that it's all about love means so much to me, because that's what I've wanted my whole life. So, with that being said, I was reading this earlier, and I just wanted to read it, and I'm sure we all know it, but I just kind of wanted to read it. As our recovery progresses, we become increasingly aware of ourselves and the world around us. Our needs and wants, our assets and liabilities were revealed to us. We came to realize that we had no power to change the outside world. We could only change ourselves. The program of Narcotics Anonymous provides an opportunity for us to ease the pain of living through spiritual principles. We are very fortunate to have had this program before very few people recognized that addiction was a disease. Recovery was only a dream. The responsible, productive, drug-free lives of thousands of members illustrate the effectiveness of our program. Recovery is a reality for us today. By working the steps, we are rebuilding our fractured personalities. Narcotics Anonymous is a healthy environment for growth. As a fellowship, we love and cherish one another, supporting our new way of life. As we grow, we come to understand humility as acceptance of both our assets and liabilities. What we want the most is to feel good about ourselves. Today, we have real feelings of love, joy, hope, sadness, and excitement. Our feelings are not our old drug-induced feelings. And I read that, man, because when I read that, like, it kind of speaks to me about the step process, and it speaks to me about a lot of shit that I've been through in my life. When I tell you that I was that dude who kind of sat on the couch and waited for people to call and allow me to actually feel important about myself, like, that was a reality for me. You know what I mean? Some things happened when I was a kid, man, that, like, woke up the disease within inside me, right? And there's a dude that's going to be speaking here, and I heard what he said when I heard him speak the one time, and he talked about the first time he ever heard the disease whisper in his ear. You know what I mean? And when he said that, like, I did a process of identification through it and related to it, because, like, I can remember an exact point in time when I first heard that disease whisper in my ear. You know what I mean? When it said to me, like, maybe they won't love you. Maybe you're not good enough. Maybe you're too different. Right? And the first time I heard that shit, like, I was like a 7-year-old kid, man. And that shit was frightening and terrifying. And I'll tell you what, it fed me some misinformation that I rolled off for the next 15 to 16 years of my life. I rolled off that information that I fed myself that I wasn't good enough. That I had to do whatever I could to make you like me. I had to do whatever I could to want you to hang out with me. I had to do whatever I could to appear cool in your eyes. And like, I found relief when I found a crew of people that were utilizing a substance that accepted me, right? I started smoking cigarettes at a young age and I was outcast right at that direct point in time. From all my friends that I was hanging out with, all of a sudden I became a bad kid. So I went with the bad kids. And we were all utilizing substances to make life a little easier, I guess. But that's my point of identification, man. Like, I live to use and use to live. Very simply. It's what I did on a daily basis to make myself feel better about who I am. I went through 15 years of dereliction, degradation, all that shit it talks about. Like, I experienced every single bit of it. I was that guy that no matter what you said to me, I was saying the worst to myself on a regular basis. So, like, there was points, man, that I had a moment of clarity. Like, I went through the military, man. I did time over in the big sandbox, and there was a lot of trauma through that affected me, made me feel even worse, kind of monsterish, if you will. And when I came back from that, things just got increasingly worse. And I've been thinking about this a lot, man. There was a time when, like, I was out on a run with my boys for a few weeks, right? And I ended up getting abscesses on my legs. And I remember somebody told me, right, that if I cut them open and squeeze whatever it was out and then burn them, that, like, they'd go away. So I started performing surgery on myself in a dirty-ass van with a dirty-ass knife. Right, I cut open all these bumps on my legs, and like halfway through it, like I found something shiny and new to play with, so I quit. Right, like I quit. I didn't squeeze anything out. I didn't burn nothing. Like, it was just, and all this shit went into my blood, and I went septic, and I spent some time in an ICU because I almost died. But I remember, man, my mother came up, and I begged my dad not to tell my mom, but my mom came up, and I speak about this, man, because it's important for me that she came up and she started screaming at me like, "Do you want to die?" Now, I tell you this, like, because this is where, like, an idea started to form in my head that I am going to die. This is probably going to happen. Sooner or later, probably sooner than later, and we're just going to roll with this. But I tell you that as well because, like, I seen the pain in my mother's eyes. Now, I got out of the hospital. I ain't do nothing, man. I needed some other drug, and everything would be all right. And I rolled with it for a while. But a year later, man, after my mom had kicked me out and all that stuff, I called her. Because she said the only time to call me is to call for a ride to rehab. And I called her for a ride to rehab, right? And she took me. And I don't remember much of the detox. But I do remember, man. I remember I went to my first NA meeting, right? I went to my first NA meeting at that rehab. And I remember walking in the door. And as soon as I walked in the door, like, this really tall, really big guy gave me a hug. And I wasn't that dude who was like I hear a lot of people talking, like, first time somebody gave me a hug, I was like, whoa. That wasn't me. I, like, grabbed that motherfucker. I was like, come here. Right? Because it was the first time somebody grabbed me and squeezed me, and, like, I could feel something. right? Like I wasn't on any kind of substances at all. Like it was nothing. And this dude gave me a hug, and it was like that hug that like you can feel love in, right? And I've said this for years, that this man hugged the life back into me. That's the same dude. He gave me my white key tag tonight. Gave me another hug like that. And he said something to me. And when he gave me my key tag and he gave me a hug, he whispered something to me. He said, "You don't ever have to use again." Now, I know that sounds like minutin' and but like here's what happened, right? He said that to me and I believed him. Right? And like, I don't know, man, people say shit to me my whole life, right? Like, my wife tells me I'm handsome, and I just kind of keep it pushing, because like, if I don't fucking believe you, it don't matter. So like, this dude tells me I never have to use again, and I believed him. And I kind of pushed back from him at that point in time, and I'm, are you sure? Right? Like, are you sure I don't ever have to use again? Are you sure that, like, I don't have to have a substance in me to feel all right about myself? Are you sure that I don't have to die? Because I'm telling you, man, like, I was on that path that, like, I knew it was going to happen. I don't have a bunch of jails and shit in my story. I spent a month in jail. And it was the worst fucking month of my life, man. That shit sucked. Right? And I told her, I spent 18 months in Iraq, man. I would have rather been out there than in jail. But, like, I was going to die. So, he told me that, man. And I've always kind of rolled off of I hear things, right? And I remember I was at Start to Live one year, and that whole time, like, I just hear people talking about moments, man. And what I've done is, like, when I kept hearing moments, I was thinking about it to myself and, like, praying on it and talking to my sponsor about, like, why do I keep hearing this? And that, and what I've come to believe, right, is that, like, my life is just full of moments. It's all about the moments. I work so I can have moments. I practice to the best of my ability a 12-step program so I can have moments, right? Like, my life is just a series of moments that kind of fuel my spirit. And, like, that was a moment in my life when somebody told me that I don't have to use anymore, and I fucking believed them. Because it was something that I rolled off my whole entire life, that I needed something outside myself to feel better about myself. It told me right in here, more will be revealed. It's like, we just want to feel better about who we are. And like, that speaks to me directly, man, because that's all I've ever wanted, was to be okay with who Drew is. I could never find that kind of relief. I could never gain an understanding or an acceptance of myself, right? That humility and acceptance of my assets and liabilities. I was just talking about it, man. I've been having a little bit of a rough time. Like, my sponsorship family, like, we work. We work and we are in service, man. Like, we all got commitments. We work steps on a regular basis. Like, my sponsorship family, like, every weekend there's probably some part branch doing step work. Right? And we read literature and we gain understanding of traditions through being of service. And like, my sponsor told me, like, be confident within your information and within your experience, but always be open to new information and new experience. And I get, and so I gain some self-confidence within myself, and then some people come to me and they tell me that I carry myself arrogantly, that I'm arrogant and I'm chasing away newcomers and this and that. And like, man, that affects me. That hurts my feelings. Right? Like, and it hurt my feelings to the point where, like, I'm checking myself, right? Because I just told you that I've been taught to work steps, to live steps, to apply principles in my life. So, like, I'm going to check myself, and I'm asking some people, like, am I arrogant? Do I carry myself in a way that is non-attractive to a newcomer? And like, I got a general group conscience that said, no, Drew, like you carry yourself with confidence within your experience. Right? And like, I'm telling you that shit hurt my feelings because I've worked fucking hard. Hard, man. To gain some confidence within myself. Because it was never there before. My self-esteem was always lacking. So like that humility that it gives me in the book, that it gave me in my fourth step that talks about the acceptance of our liabilities and our assets. That was some of my most important points, man, of my fourth step is my assets. Because I have a hard time seeing anything good within myself. I need that shit. I need to know that I'm doing something right, that I'm all right, that I'm a good person, man, because that's what I want to be. That's why I'm here. I'm doing the best I fucking can on a daily basis. So, I come to a point, man, and I talk about this a lot, and I'm sure some of y'all have heard me share about it, right? Like, I got out of rehab and all that stuff, and I'm coming to NA, and I'm doing this and doing that. Like, I got a sponsor in the other fellowship, man, and on a 10-minute ride to a meeting, he tells me that, I don't even remember what the fuck he said, to be honest with you, but, like, it was more along the lines of, like, I can't, he can, so you're going to let him. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. Rock on. And we get to this meeting. I go jump out of the truck. And he's like, so, we'll start your fourth step here in a week. I'm like, whoa, what do you mean my fourth step, right? Because, like, fourth step is the scariest thing in the world, says everybody who's never done one, right? And I hadn't done one at that point in time, and it was terrifying to me, man. I've done some shit in my life that I'm ashamed of. Right? So, like, I'm scared of that shit. I barely know you, motherfucker. I can't. What can I do? He can. Who the fuck is he? And I'm going to let him. Let him do what? You know what I mean? Like, I had some questions. It was like that Nancy Reagan shit. Like, this is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Yeah, motherfucker, I got some. You know what I mean? And, like, so I moved forward on that, but, like, I got one of them real hot, passionate, and unhealthy relationships that newcomers get into, man. And that rolled for a year and a half, man. But, like, when I tell you this motherfucker was unhealthy, like, it was rough, right? It was like battery acid, man. It was so much to the point, man. And like I said, I'm sure people have heard me share about this. Like, I would go to meetings with her, and like, I would count the seconds that she was hugging dudes. I ain't fucking joking, man. 1, 2, 3. All right. That ain't no NA hug. That ain't no NA hug. Right, we walk out of the meeting and my day would be all fucked up and I'd be looking at her to see who she's looking at and fucking insanity, right? But what I allowed that to do, man, is I walked out of the doors of NA, man, and I went to this other fellowship and I was hiding out for a minute. And I went to my very first NA convention. My man. Did you see that? The light? Like, went to my very first NA convention. So I was hiding out for a minute, man. I went from sponsor to sponsor. My first year, I got, like, 4 different sponsors in and out of each fellowship. Couldn't decide. I just knew I didn't want to use anymore, man. I knew that what that dude told me was the truth. Like, I never had to use again. Right, so like I was just trying to figure out how to do that. So I went to my very first NA convention, man. It was the East Coast convention at Robert Morris. Not this most previous one, but the one before that, way before that. Well, not way before, but a few years before. And that's why I try to get like some new people, man. I'm always trying to get people to go to events like this. Events like this allow me to see what it talks about in the first tradition, that Narcotics Anonymous is more than just a fucking group of people in a church in my hometown. Right? Because, like, I went to this event, man, and, you know, I was fighting with that girl the whole ride up, man, because I was going through a phone. Like, I haven't went through a phone in fucking 3 years. You know what I mean? Like, jealous assholes recover too. You know what I mean? So, like, but that's important to me, man, because I've been in a committed relationship for 3 years, and I love my wife with all of my heart, and she is crazy. But I love her, and I love every crazy bone in that woman's body. She's given me my child, man. She has loved me unconditionally, and she's literally my best friend, man. But, like, I was going through phone, and I was all mad, and then da-da-da-da, and it was one of the fucking 50th times that we had broken up in the year, but I went to this clean time countdown on a Saturday night, right? And, when I went to this clean time countdown, man, there was something that happened, right? They're playing something up on this TV, and I'm watching that, and that's cool. And then all of a sudden, like, these two people get up on this stage, and they start shouting out these numbers. And as soon as they start shouting out these numbers, like, the room comes alive. Like, and when I say alive, I mean it was like that motherfucker was breathing, right? Like, I could feel it. I could feel something. Right? And people are pounding on the table, and they're yelling, and they're screaming, and my heart's racing, and it was amazing. And these people with all this crazy clean time, I come to find out it was a clean time countdown. But, like, all these people with these crazy amount of numbers are standing up, man, and, like, everybody's cheering for them, and I came out of it, man, and, like, I came out of it so just amped up, and something that clean time countdown had changed me to my core, right? And it done something inside me that made me see how real this thing is that we do here. I had to go back to my room and, like, take a half hour all by myself just to collect my thoughts, right? Like, you ever been so filled up to the point where, like, you got tears leaking out of your eyes, and it's not even like you're crying, it's just like you're so full that, like, these tears are coming out? I don't know if anybody relates to that. I guess that, I don't know. That's what happens to me, man. But I'm just there, and so, like, I come home from that, man, and I share about this, man. I don't share about this to, like, to knock anything or to make anything like that, but, like, I came home from that clean time countdown or that. Look, man, I got ADD, so, like, that's gonna. I got squirrels. You know what I mean? Like, that's even worse, bro. I'm just gonna have to turn this way. But, like, I came home from that event, man, and I came home on fire, right? And I was in the middle of a four-step. I said I was ready for a four-step. So, like, I came home, and I was writing my resentments list. And I came home, and I flew in the door, and I started writing on my resentments list, right? And when I finished my resentments list, like, I called the dude that was sponsoring me at that point in time. And this dude kept telling me he was so concerned with the relationship I was in. Right? It was anytime I talked to him, it was, have you gotten out of that relationship yet? You better get out of that relationship. You're going to use, get out of the relationship. And so, like, I got home from this event, and, like, I finished that, and I called him, and he didn't answer. And I texted him, and I said, hey, look, man, I'm done with my resentments list. What do I do now? And he texts me, man, and he tells me that, he says, Drew, I thought, I can't help you with your living situation. I can't help you with your relationship situation. I thought I could help you with your using situation, but I can't even do that. Maybe you should find a new sponsor. And then he said this, man. He said, maybe you should find an NA sponsor. I don't know if this motherfucker said it out of malice, but it was the best suggestion he ever gave me. Right? At that point in time, man, I went to three other dudes within that fellowship, and each one told me that they couldn't help me. Right? I told you, man, that since I was a fucking kid, I didn't feel like I was good enough. I didn't feel like I fit in. I felt like I was different. And then I got these three dudes telling me I can't be helped. Now, maybe they were coming from a place of love because they didn't understand me and da 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 da. But what I'm hearing is I ain't worth it. I'm constitutionally incapable. Right? Fuck that, man. So, at that clean time countdown, man, there was this dude sitting across the way at me, and he was kind of staring at me. I thought it was creepy at that point in time, man, but look, man, like, I come to understand why he was staring at me at that point in time. Because I've been there when I've seen somebody come to life. I've been there when I see somebody who catches this thing. This spirit that fucking lives in this fellowship. I've seen it, man, and it is so fucking beautiful to watch somebody grab a hold of this, and you can see it. It's almost like you can see a transformation, an evolution, and I mean, like, that's what he was watching in me, and it, you know, it was loving. It wasn't creepy, but it seemed that way to me. But I ended up, man, I seen him at a meeting 2 days after that, man, and I was panicking, man. I had like a little over a year clean, and like, all I knew was, like, I didn't want to use, and I was 100% positive you had to have a sponsor to not use, right? So I'm just waiting, man. I'm waiting for a needle to come running out of the fucking bushes and attack me, or I'm waiting, you know what I mean? Just, but like, it sounds ridiculous, but that was almost like how I was feeling, like, creeping around every fucking corner, you know what I mean? And but I go to a meeting, man, and this dude ends up sitting right in front of me, and I share at a burning desire how I'm terrified, man. I'm terrified I ain't got a sponsor. I was basically told I can't be helped, and he turned around and he said, "You can be helped." He said, "I love you, and call me." And ever since that day, the day after that, I called him, and ever since then, he's been my sponsor. And this man has shown me things and guided me through things, and he's loved me, man, and never once has he ever said anything about my fucking relationships, man. That always used to bug the shit out of me. Like, I don't know, man, I don't know what anybody else does, but like work steps, man. Work steps, get in fucking service, find out what traditions are, share honestly, get a fellowship, whatever the fuck you do with your love life, do it, man, just don't fucking use. Like, I ain't a relationships counselor, so I ain't here to do that, and it's a good thing I'm not, because my sponsee's getting some fucked up relationships. But, I love y'all. Like, he's just, he's loved me, man. He's loved me back to life. His knowledge, his just, I always consider him, and like, I say this about Rich, too. Me and Seth both do. They're like, they float. And I don't know what it is, man, but it's like they're almost floating on principles or something. I don't fucking know, but that's how I see it in my head, man. It might sound cartoonish, but, you know, they mean something to me, man. You know, they do. And he started taking me through steps, man, and he took me through that first step, man. And I remember that, like, that first question in that first step, what does the disease of addiction mean to me? And you know why I remember that motherfucker so well? Because I looked it up, right? I looked up the disease. I looked up disease. I looked up addiction. I looked up this, and I was writing it down. I'm like, I'm going to blow this motherfucker's mind with this answer, right? And he stopped me in the middle of giving him Webster's fucking answer to the question. And he said, "What does it mean to you? How does it affect you? What does your, how, where does it grab you at?" Right? And through working that step, and I've gained a greater understanding, man. The thing that I figured out about steps, man, is like they change, like what they mean to me change. Like my understanding changes as I grow and evolve in this process, and what the first step means to me today is sure as fuck not what it meant to me back when I was answering that question. And something about the first step, man, like, like a simple explanation of the first step, man, is like, I'm powerless, man. I'm powerless over the disease. And for me to understand exactly what I'm powerless over, like, I need to know what the fucking disease does, how it affects me. My disease affects me through my thoughts and feelings, man. Right? So I'm powerless a lot of times over the way that I think, like that first thought. Like my understanding of like why people say first thought wrong is because a lot of times, man, my disease comes flying at me in that first thought. Right? And I'm powerless over that. I have control, right? I'm powerless over what I'm not responsible for my disease, but I am responsible for my recovery. Right, so I'm not responsible for that first thought that comes flying in that's unspiritual and makes me feel like shit and makes me question everything about myself. I'm not responsible for when I gain these feelings, man, because I'm powerless over my feelings. I don't ever want to feel bad again in my life, but I do every day. So if I had some control over them, I wouldn't feel bad no more. So, like, understanding that, but, like, also understanding that being responsible for my recovery is, like, not trying to control those things that I'm powerless over because that's what makes me unmanageable. Right? I started talking about, like, courage isn't the absence of fear, man. Like, I had never been in the ocean past my ankles, man. I'm fucking terrified of sharks, man. Like, I watched Shark Week when I was 5 years old. My mom was going on some boat cruise. I flipped out for like 3 hours. And ever since then, like, sharks are fucking terrifying, man. Like, they are literally a killing machine. They're probably God's greatest killing machine on the face of this earth, right? And they scare the shit out of me. So, like, I never went into an ocean, but, like, I went to the East Coast Convention down in Virginia. And, like, I went. Me and my wife and a good friend of mine, we went to the ocean after the convention, and I got in the water. I was in the water up past my neck. And there was waves, man, huge waves just coming in crashing. And like I told you, I've never been in the ocean like that. So I'm like playing, man, but like I'm trying to like fight these waves. Like I'm diving through them. I'm trying to jump over them. I'm trying to like do all this crazy shit, and they're beating the bullshit out of me. Right? I mean, these waves are smacking me in the face. Basically, I felt like they were punching me, man. And then they grab me and slam me to the ground, and it was exhausting and it hurt a lot. And so I look, man, and I look, and all I can see is water as far as I can see where the sky meets the waterline. And I gain this picture in my head of, like, how big this body of water is. It's fucking huge. Right? It's most of the earth. And you got little old me, Drew, trying to stop waves. And I said, that's fucking crazy. And so I just started going with the waves. I quit trying to jump through them. I quit trying to jump over them. I just went with them. And it quit hurting so fucking bad. Right? And like as soon as I didn't get hit in the face again, like, I'm like, oh, a first step. Right? Like it hit me like that, and I had an epiphany, and it was, woo, you know what I mean? And God is good, but on to my second step, man, like, a second step was a beautiful thing to me. And where I told you that, like, my understanding of the steps evolved, like, it's all about love, right? And I say that because what I'm telling you is like, when I heard that, like, it makes sense to me now why that made sense to me then, right? And came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, right? And like, I always had like this question in my head, man, is like, what am I being restored to? Like, the restoration process, it's a lifelong process, and we had, I had a little boy, man. I love him so much. But he's 18 months old, right? And I see this kid, man. I see the light in his eyes, and I see how much he loves people, right? Anybody here that knows my little boy, like, he comes to you. Like, he's not timid. Like, you walk up to him, like, he's reaching out for you to grab him. He wants a hug. He wants you to acknowledge him. Like, it's love, man. And, like, I see that, and something hits me, man. Like, I used to love that way. I used to, and dude holds faith. Like, you can, he's not scared of shit, right? He holds complete faith that his daddy is going to make sure he doesn't get hurt. So, like, I see this kid loving other people blindly and holding faith that he is going to be okay no matter what. And to me, man, that is a fucking restoration. If I can be restored to loving people blindly, right? Seventh step tells me that kindness is not weakness. Right? And that means something to me, because kindness is not weakness. I can never be kind to you if I think you might get over on me. I can't be kind to you if I think it doesn't look cool to other people. I can't be kind to you if it makes me look fucking weak. But like, kindness is not weakness. Just because I show you love, blind love, and you get over on me, that is not my fucking fault. That is not my fault. If I gave to you selflessly, with love, unconditional love behind it, it's not my fault if you fuck that up. I gave to you with no motives attached. I gave to you with all the love I could. Right? And to me, that's a restoration, man. That is a restoration to sanity, because the insanity that I've lived in was that jaded bullshit that I can't let nobody get over on me. I can't believe in the fellowship, or I can't believe in God to the point that no matter what anybody takes from me, I'm still going to be all right. That's fucking insane to me. All I need is you guys and God. Shit, at some points you guys are God to me. Followed by a third step, man. I was working the third step, and I came to this question in the step working guide is how can, what's the difference between my will and God's will, right? And I called this dude, and I used to call him all the time for step work and stuff like that to just to see some of his insight in on it, and he's real long-winded, man. He fucking talked for like an hour, man. But at the end of that conversation, he says, "Drew, what do you think spiritual principles are?" And my fucking mind was blown, right? Because I had my sponsors always talking about spiritual principle this, and spiritual principle that, spiritual principle whatever. I never got it, man. Yeah, acceptance, cool. Let's roll. You know what I mean? Surrender. I quit. You know what I mean? Like, let something else take control. Fuck that. You know what I mean? Whatever. But then, like, he said that to me, and then, like, that blew it wide open for me, man. Turning my will and my life over to the care of God, like God's direction that it talks about in the seventh step, like following God's direction, is the principles to me. God has given me clear-cut direction of how I should live my life through the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous. Spiritual principles in general are a fucking good way to live your life. So I've come to find out. But like, if I'm practicing those principles sooner or later, like it talks about aligning our will with God's will. Like, if I'm practicing those principles to the best of my ability, and practicing a spiritual principle is an act of love. God is love. Even more why that shit makes sense to me. But I'm aligning my will in some way, shape, or form with the God of my understandings. That's a third step to me, man. Making the decision to practice principle. Followed by a fourth, man. My fourth step, Took me fucking 2 years to write. I took way too long on it. But I did that motherfucker like there was no fifth step. Right? And I was hurting here and hurting there and like, because like it brought up some shit in me that like I haven't talked about, like I didn't want to talk about, like I haven't looked at, and like I'm writing on resentments, and like that list was huge in my four step, man. Like that inventory practice of making that list, like, was huge for me, because I sat down, prayed, and I wrote that list, and no matter what I say, like, I don't care if, like, that resentment is over, I understand that, like, it was my fault in the first place, like, you were on that list, so you need to be talked about, you need to be wrote about, you are inventory material. So I wrote, man, and, like, some of those fucking resentments that I thought I was over, I started writing on them, and I wasn't over them. It bubbled that shit up, and I was like, fuck you, motherfucking, you know what I mean? But, like, I got through it, man, and I procrastinated, and, you know, and there was points that it hurt, man, like I said. But when I got done with that motherfucker, man, I don't think I've ever felt more accomplished than I have in my life. The sense of accomplishment that came to me once I wrote that last word in that last notebook, man, it was beautiful, man. I was blown away. And like I went and I shared it with my sponsor and my sponsorship family. Like, my fifth step is not a reading of my four step. My four step includes reading my four step to my sponsor. Well, he sits there and picks out all these defects on this list. Right? And I thought I had a lot, but I got a sponsor. He's got more than me, so. Anyway. So, I get to my fifth step, man, and, like, I'll tell you what. Something that happened in that fourth step and reading that motherfucker, man. Like, I always blame myself, man, for, like, something that God has bestowed upon me, like it was something bad. Like I told you when I was a little kid, man, like I was like I was discriminated against because I'm a brown guy, you know what I mean? And I was, man, and like that shit plagued me from the time I was like 8 years old until the time I was 18 and left and went to the military. Like, it was a relief to wake up in those barracks and like not be worried that somebody's gonna call me a name like Dirt Chicken or Sand Nigger or whatever it was they called me. Like, that was relief to me, man, not to have to worry about if I was going to be belittled that day. Right? And, like, I always blame myself for it. So much so to the point that, like, when I'm sharing with my sponsor, like, he smashes his hand on the table that we're reading and he says, Drew, that is not your fault. Those people treated you badly. That was wrong. It is not your fault. And I'll tell you what, man. When that man told me that, he gave me permission to quit fucking owning other people's shit. Also, man, when there was some shit, man, in my four-step, like, I ain't going to tell you all about right now. And, like, I almost flipped past that shit, right? Like, I got it, and I know where that motherfucker was at exactly in the book, right? So I read the one secret, and then I grabbed the page, grabbed two pages to flip past it, right? And it talks about how God's with you in the reading of this fucking thing in the basic text. And as soon as I flipped past it, it's like my hand just grabbed it and opened it right to where I was trying to pass. And I read it, and it was something that I hold and am very ashamed of. And my sponsor came directly at me with a Me Too. One of the things that I feel that it beats me the fuck up on a regular basis, and this man who I love with all my heart, who I was so scared was going to judge me and not treat me the same, after I told him this, looks me directly in the eye and says, Drew, Me Too. I love you. What's the next thing say? And it wasn't even that big of a deal, man. Which gave me permission to kind of forgive myself. Because this man who I emulate and love and desire to be like, because he still has what I want, 25 years clean, still attends 3 meetings a week, is still in service, still fucking believes in Narcotics Anonymous. I want that. So there was just awakening after awakening after awakening within that 4-step, followed by my 5th man. Our 5th step is you take that defects list and you write it down. You write down all your defects, and then you write how they generally have affected you in your life, which allows us to pair out patterns within our life and how these exact natures of our wrongs, our defects, carry on throughout my life so I can be aware of them. And like, he had me go outside to read this all by myself at a picnic table, and it was so fucking uncomfortable and so weird. And like, I'm sitting here and I'm fucking reading this shit, and like, I'm like, I get to like my fucking 10th defect and I'm reading it, right? And something happened. I heard it, right? Like, I hear myself talk a lot because I got a big ass mouth and I like to talk. But I don't always hear myself. But like, I heard what I was saying. I heard a pattern within my life. And I was reading it to myself, man. Which was, in the same instance, I was reading it to God. And then I followed up by reading it with Him, man. And that was some freedom within its own right, man. Knowing where these patterns are, knowing where these exact natures are, and starting to become aware, which is directly followed by my fucking 6th step, which my 6th step fucking hurt, man. Like I've never been, like, you ever fell, right, and skinned your knee on some pavement, right, the next day? That raw fucking skin. Like, that's kind of what, like, my whole entire spirit felt like. It was like this whole fucking shell had got ripped off. And I was just raw. And I was fucking... Seth told me I was self-righteous and it hurt my fucking feelings. But then looking at it, I am self-righteous. You know what I mean? Being frank, I wanted to hold on to being frank. Because I felt like I could fucking actually speak my mind. And that hurt. So I wanted to get rid of that. And like in the beginning of my 6th step, like, there was some shit I wanted to hold on to, man. But after the fucking 6, 7, 8 months to a year of being on my 6th step, like, at the end, I was like, just fucking take it. Take it all. I don't want it. It just fucks me up, right? And it keeps me further away from God. My defects keep me further away from the love that I'm supposed to give and I'm supposed to receive. That's what I understand. That's why they're exact natures of my wrongs, because they keep me away from love. They keep me away from God. They allow me to not be who I'm supposed to be. Also, my defects are my disease. Like, I hear a motherfucker, oh, it irritates the shit out of me talking about addiction is a circumstance. Motherfucker, addiction ain't no circumstance. It's a disease. It's what we got. My defects are a direct result of my disease. If the core of my disease is self-obsession, and my defects are regular human traits inflated by my self-obsession, that's my disease. It ain't no circumstance that I'm dealing with. It's a disease. Anyway, ran over. And 6 was rough, man. 6 hurt. But I was immediately given relief, and I was talking to Rich earlier, and he couldn't have fucking hit the head more on the nail. Whatever, however that says. But he couldn't have said it more right when he said 7 was a life-changing event. 7 changed my life, man. 7 changed my perception. When it said in that motherfucker that we are all human beings and just trying to do our best, I felt such a weight lifted off me. It gave me permission, man, to forgive myself. Because, like, I was trying to put them defects in a headlock. I was trying everything. And I was looking for perfection. But perfection is a fucking divine quality. So, like, seven gave me immediate relief. And that same statement is followed up by, if we're just trying to do our best, then maybe we can allow some other people to be human beings and try and do their best. So that statement right there allowed me to love me even more, which allowed me to love you even more. I just finished my seventh step. I'm about to go on to eight. Waiting for my sponsor's guidance to let me loose on that. Laurel Mountain Highlands, man, is my home. I've been involved with something as of late where I was feeling like a stranger in my own home, and I refuse to do that anymore. So I'm home, man, and I feel all of us are here. And I just hope we have a wonderful weekend, and I love y'all. That's all I got.